Welcome and thank you for standing by. I would like to remind all participants that today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now, I would like to turn the meeting over to your host, Mr. Rick Mayo with Tivoli Cloud Marketing Organization. Sir, you may begin.
Thanks. Today, I'd like to be talking to you about an important topic we have on our cloud marketing, and that's the topic titled The Importance of Service Management in Managing Cloud-Based Services, What Drives the ROI? And this was a topic that sales made very clear over the last few weeks that they wanted to hear more about, you know, what's really behind cloud from an ROI perspective, what can they tell customers about the savings they can expect when they're implementing a cloud environment. You know, there's a lot of material that's available if you go out to the web and the IBM cloud site and internally on, you know, the different types of clouds and what, you know, what's IBM's cloud strategy and, you know, talk about the many cloud-based offerings that IBM is delivering. And they all say that, you know, you can obviously get a lot of benefits out of cloud and cost savings and efficiencies, but there really was kind of a lack of going into some details of, well, how are those savings achieved? And that's really will be the focus of this presentation, to really drill down into, you know, how you can get these savings, what are the savings, to try to quantify them a little better, and then tell you how you can go about achieving them. So we'll be looking at, you know, some of the fundamental components of the cloud and how they can really drive savings in an organization. And I think this will be definitely a conversation you want to have with your customers that are interested in cloud computing. So if we move on to chart two, the agenda, we'll look at a few topics here, as I described. First, the pressures on IT. You know, what are some of the pain points that IT is feeling today? You know, what's driving their interest in cloud computing and as a solution to those pains? Also, the ROI. We'll talk about a few examples of ROI and how the savings are driven. And then we'll talk also, and this is key to the presentation, as you've seen by the title, the service management aspect and why that's a key component of driving the cost savings that customers are expecting from implementing a cloud environment. So we'll go into some of the options of delivering those savings through service management and then give you a summary of the presentation. So if we move on to chart three, the pressures on IT today, and these are ones you're probably all familiar with in talking to your customers about the, you know, conflicting demands where they're basically trying to do more with less. You know, they want more services delivered faster at a lower cost. And a lot of the organizations are concerned about how they're going to meet these demands, you know, expand the services they deliver, handle the workloads that they have, you know, with the personnel they have, because they're spreading, you know, a lot of their key resources over many projects that they're trying to complete. And they're really looking for ways to automate that, make it more flexible, to be able to respond to these challenges. And a lot of them see, you know, cloud computing, and that they've probably been hearing a lot of about, maybe even starting to do some pilots of cloud, and they're really interested in how cloud can address those challenges and provide the payback they're looking for from that environment. So let's start with a look at, you know, what is IBM's definition of cloud, and that's on chart four. And it's been interesting, at least in the U.S. market. IBM has been running a commercial about cloud computing, and the commercial starts out with this kind of official-looking technical person talking about cloud computing being a new service consumption and delivery model that has ubiquitous network access and rapid elasticity. And then it cuts to a picture of a 10-year-old girl going, huh? What's that mean? And that's when, you know, I see this chart now, I think of that commercial. Where I think when you know, look at this from an IT perspective, I think there's some recognition of what the new service consumption and delivery models are, but they're really not sure about, you know, how this all is actually delivering the cost benefits that are touted of a cloud computing environment, you know, how they can meet the challenges with the cloud and get all the cost benefits that have been talked about. So that's really, again, what we'll be focused on is looking at what these new service consumption and delivery models are and how we can drive efficiencies with them. And key to driving that efficiency, as you see on chart 5, is to have both the infrastructure leverage as well as the labor leverage are two of the major driving factors in the cloud economics. And when I look at this chart, you know, it strikes me that the bottom half of the chart is probably the one that's better understood, where you can look at, improved hardware utilization, lower capital requirements, and this is where a lot of customers are at today, where they've started doing some level of consolidation of their hardware and virtualization so they can run multiple workloads, on the hardware and improve the utilization of it. And that's where you really get the infrastructure leverage. That's kind of a key building block of delivering cloud-based services, that you have a virtualized infrastructure. But when you look at the cost factors, and where you're doing the savings, it's really the top part of the chart in the labor leverage where you get the most savings. When you have automated management, on-demand self-service, these are the areas that really drive a significant part of the savings of moving to a cloud-based environment. Well, I think a lot of people feel that, if I've, consolidated and virtualized my hardware, I've driven these hardware savings and, energy savings by having less hardware, but it's really the labor savings that turn out to be where the majority of the savings are implemented in a cloud environment, and that's driven through the service management components that we'll talk about. So let's start to look at a little more detail of what these savings are. So if you move on to chart 6, we have this chart, and this has been used quite extensively in the last 12 months to talk about cloud computing and how it drives down the cost of computing. And you can see in the graph on the right where you have the unit costs over time of a traditional infrastructure and then the enterprise cloud. And you can see the fairly large gap shown here that, there's a significant gap in the cost of the enterprise cloud being a lot lower than the traditional infrastructure. And you see on the left some of the areas of, a 50% reduction in labor cost and a 75% improvement in capital utilization and so forth that really start to add up to significant savings. And I think, when you see this chart, and I've seen, Irving Wadowski-Berger in a webcast present this, and he felt this was one of the critical charts in a cloud computing presentation to say that, if you look at this kind of, cost savings, it's not the kind of chart you can look at and say, well, I'm not sure we'll really do anything yet, or we'll wait for another year to see what happens. It's something you really need to take action on and start to think seriously about implementing, in the near term. And because as your competitors start to move to a cloud-based infrastructure, and if they're starting to see these kind of cost savings versus a traditional infrastructure, that's really driving, a significant savings in their business and freeing up, money they can now spend on innovation versus maintaining their existing infrastructure. And, why that is, you see at the bottom, again, some of the savings as far as, moving from a traditional infrastructure where you're very siloed as far as having one application per server, very low utilization rates, between maybe 5, 10, 15% utilization, and a lot of manual operations and maintenance of those environments versus an internal private cloud where you start to have a very virtualized environment approaching, 50% and greater hardware utilization rates and a service management platform that really starts to drive the savings you see in a cloud environment. So this is, I think, clearly why a lot of customers are very excited about cloud, why you're hearing a lot of buzz in the market around cloud computing, because there are these, large cost savings that can be driven by moving to a cloud infrastructure. Now, as we've talked about, and we move into chart seven, on chart 7, we talk about service management, and that's a lot of what we'll be focused on in this presentation is when you start to look at, the top part of when we head back on chart 5, the labor savings and the labor leverage that you can get. Most of that is driven by having the service management tools in place that allow you to really drive the process automation and provisioning, you know, automated provisioning, those kind of things that can really start to save you a lot of time, deliver your services more quickly and more cost effectively. So that's where we'll be spending, you know, a lot of the presentation focused on, you know, the ROI aspects and then how those are driven through the cost savings of service management. So let's get into some of the details here. In the next three charts, it gives some ROI examples of, you know, what these cost savings are. So the first one on chart 8 looks at a banking example with a large number of servers, and it starts to lay out, you know, well, what are some of the ROI savings? And this data was generated from a group in IBM Research that had gone out and interviewed a number of customers about their existing environment, you know, how many servers they had, what were their labor costs, you know, how many projects they were doing, and then looking at, you know, the data they had around the savings of using provisioning, of using, you know, more automation, other system management tools, what were the kind of productivity savings that could be achieved, and they built this model where they could plug in the customer's existing environment and the savings that had been, you know, gathered from other SO accounts that IBM has and other customer interactions, and build a model that could project out the cost savings for these customers by moving to a cloud environment, you know, what it would cost them, what the savings were, and that's what's on the next series of charts. And as we see in the banking example, and again, this had a large number, you know, hundreds of servers in this environment, and if they were to move to a cloud computing model, they could have a payback in, you know, basically a little less than 5 months from their initial investment, generating you an ROI on the order of 156% in an annual basis. And I think the interesting thing is when you look at the pie chart of how those savings broke out, the three green boxes we have circle the key areas that were driven basically from a service management standpoint, where you're really starting to leverage cost savings, improve productivity from a labor perspective. And you can see the provisioning costs were 38% of the savings. The system admin costs were another 40%. And then the testing productivity was actually a large absolute number reduced. You know, it was a very significant number reduced. But in the overall scheme of things, it was only 4% of the total in that case. But if you look at those three boxes, obviously that's the bulk of the savings projected, were the service management-driven savings, and then you had a 15% hardware savings. And in the software, I kind of show that as a negative 3%, meaning you did spend more on the service management software to achieve the savings, but you can see the additional software costs were, you know, minuscule and compared to the large savings that were achieved in the other areas. So I think that, you know, really kind of starts to lay out, you know, the large savings that can be derived from moving to a cloud environment, how quickly it can start to pay back, and you can see the cumulative savings and expenses on the other side, where as you go over the 3 years out, you know, you continue to ramp up the savings as time goes on. So, you know, it's a very, you know, comparing the cloud environment versus the current IT model, how the lines continue to diverge over time due to the additional savings that occur. On chart 9, we look at a different industry, a manufacturing account, and this was a smaller, you know, like a 10-server environment in an SO account, where, again, they achieved significant savings also in testing productivity and system admin costs. In this example, just to give you different flavors of ROI, their provisioning savings were less because they had a very small server base to amortize the additional administrative costs over. But still, they had savings in those areas. And again, the service management-driven savings in the green boxes were a significant piece of the overall savings for this customer. And you can see they had about a 12-month payback period and a 75% average annual ROI for the 3 years with this. So again, it's seeing, you know, again, significant savings in the service management areas. And then on chart 10, we look at a more middle of the road customer here in the banking business that I think had on the order of 50 servers. So here we have a nice kind of balanced view of a 25% productivity savings. And this is really savings of, if you're not having people, waiting for services to be deployed and a lot of those delays in getting new services or doing testing. And in this testing example, as they're waiting for that, you can start to reduce the wait time and increase the productivity. And obviously that's also driven by the provisioning costs, where you can provision things a lot more quickly. So you save money there. And then the system admin costs of managing the environment are, again, the three key components. And this was about a 7-month payback with 102% ROI. So, again, I think all three of these customers show significant savings in the cloud environment, again, driven by a lot of the service management components. So if we move to chart 11, it talks a little bit about, what are the areas of service management that drove the savings. And on average, 81% of the cloud payback that we showed on the previous three charts were driven by labor savings enabled by service management. Now, if you look at the three sub-bullets here, we talk about, what are the three main areas that we're driving those savings in, and then the subsequent charts will go into more detail on each of these areas. But the first one, dealing with the simplified user interaction with IT, really deals with productivity savings, that if you have a self-service interface and a service catalog where users can request their own services from a standard set of services you're delivering as defined in a service catalog, it makes it a lot more productive for the end user because they feel that they can now go out and request the services when they need them, get them delivered quickly, so they don't spend a lot of time waiting for services to be delivered. Hand-in-hand with that is the second major bullet around provisioning, that you have provisioning and a policy-based view of this to lower costs. And certainly the automated provisioning aspects are a huge component of payback in a typical cloud environment where you can automatically provision and deprovision resources to get more efficiencies out of the hardware you have, and also have, again, a great labor savings and where you can use lower-skilled personnel due to the automation, do that provisioning and deliver the services a lot faster. And then lastly, the increased system administrator productivity, which was the third area we showed in the ROI examples, and that's being able to move from more of a siloed-based management to a service management system where you can see across the environment a lot more easily, do more automation on top of the automation we've already talked about in the provisioning and the self-serve portal kind of areas. So you can really start to multiply the gains of service management across other areas, and we'll go into some details on that. So this, I think, is just an overview of how you can really unlock those savings of cloud computing by using these service management components. So let's go into the first one on chart 12, which is around the self-serve portal and the service catalog. And this is showing an example of what an end user would see is when they want to request the service. They can select the service again from a service catalog and then be able to select when they want that service provisioned and for how long, and be able to see and request the services they need for the time they need them. And I think especially in test environments, this is the key aspect where you can start to change the mindset of the tester, where in a lot of cases they don't want to give up the systems that they have because it's taken so long to get them and get them provisioned correctly, so that you have this hardware sitting around not being well utilized because it's being kind of hoarded by different testers and test organizations. So when you can start to deliver services consistently through a self-service portal, I think you can start to break that mindset where the tester can feel that, I can request it for this amount of time and then, give it back to the resource pool. And if, a week later I need it for another couple of days, I can go in and request it through this self-serve portal and be assured that it'll be quickly provisioned and made available to me again. And it was interesting in some of the research data when they asked the customers, you know, well, typically how long today are your, you know, systems that you provision in a test environment, remain around, you know, and they said, well, you know, months, years were typical answers to that, that, you know, they're there for a long time because, you know, nobody's ever sure when they're done, and the people that have them, you know, don't want to give them up in case they have to go back and do something with them. So, you know, I think this kind of highlights today, you know, the state of, you know, if you feel you can't get the resources provisioned quickly, you know, you don't give them up because it's going to be too painful to get them back. So I think this is a key aspect of some of the savings in productivity where, you know, if you can do that quickly, the testers feel comfortable in deprovisioning the systems because they know they'll be able to retrieve them quickly. And I think that's highlighted on chart 13 when we look at, you know, the traditional infrastructure versus one with the cloud and service management, you know, where they're filling out, you know, a paper form, calling IT to say, you know, is my system ready yet? And hopefully they won't answer that they need to get more hardware to make it available, which could, you know, greatly extend the time of before you would get your system. And then whether it's provisioned, you know, the same as they expect or the same as it was provisioned last time, since most of that is a manual process that requires, you know, skilled resource to do versus the cloud management with a self-serve portal where they can go in, request the services they need through the portal, and then that, you know, kicks off a workflow that is automatically tracked so they can log on, check the status of the systems they've requested, and then the provisioning obviously is implemented using a more standards-based approach so they're more confident that they're getting the system they requested and there won't be, you know, problems with it. So certainly it's a, you know, a big advantage, and we've seen, you know, in this ROI study, you know, the wait times decreased, you know, an average 98%, which is a very significant savings in, you know, the one model on the left versus the cloud-based model on the right. On 14, this was another area when we talk about, you know, the self-serve portal and delivering services through a service catalog. When I was talking to some of the salespeople, you know, they said, well, you know, if you bring up examples that really make this real for the customer of, you know, well, what is the advantage of having a standards-based, you know, services catalog where the users are requesting their services from, you know, I think this is a great example. One of the sales reps had given me where they have a, you know, a critical new application that the business needed, you know, in a very short order. So they gave it to a developer to start, you know, building this application that was, you know, a critical business need. The developer was searching around for a system to start development on and testing and found some back-level system. But thought, well, you know, I don't have much time. I'll just use this, develop the application, tested it on this old system. You know, they go to put it into production, and it won't run on the production operating system. And now they don't have time to go back and figure out where the problem is. So they have to put a, you know, an out-of-support OS into production so they can get the app running and then go back later and try to, you know, fix it and get it to work with the production operating system. And I think this is something that, you know, is kind of a real world example that customers can relate to. You know, it's, you know, yeah, you know, I can relate to this, and, you know, you can see how a cloud environment can start to address these kind of situations. Where, again, at the bottom, you know, we have where they request it from the service catalog, and IT can put in the service catalog just the supported systems that they want to, you know, support on an ongoing basis. So the developer in this case, you know, would have went to the portal, requested the service that he needed, would have gotten the latest, you know, level operating system that's in production, and would have had this, you know, production standard environment to do their development and testing on, and avoided this whole problem of, you know, having to deploy a back-level operating system into production because that's, you know, all the developer could find at the time. So it shows, I think, in a nice kind of real-world setting, the advantages of a cloud and particularly the self-service portal and the service catalog, you know, really drives home that point. Now, in chart 15, we get into the second major area of savings, which is the automated provisioning, where, you know, again, you can make resources available in minutes versus weeks. And it, and this is driven by, you know, having, again, the tools and the automation from the administrator standpoint, where they don't have to go in and do a lot of manual processes to provision a system and make sure they have the OS and the patches and the DB2 has to be configured a certain way. That can all be automated, even recorded as the, you know, skilled resource is doing it. And then those scripts can be played back and reused by, you know, lower skilled resource to, you know, again, reduce the labor costs and be able to spread that, you know, skilled resource over more projects, which is what a lot of customers are looking for. And we also deliver with this offering, you know, a set of scripts that are prepackaged that they can get from a website for a lot of the typical environments they would be provisioning. So that's a real nice way to, again, take advantage of work others have done as far as the automated provisioning tasks and use them in your environment for provisioning, you know, DB2 and WebSphere and other things that, you know, would typically be provisioned. So again, there's a lot of opportunity for savings in those environments. So let's look at slide 16, which does a comparison as we've seen for the service catalog. We're now comparing, you know, provisioning in the traditional infrastructure where, again, you have your experts that have to deploy and configure the systems, you know, typically using a more of a paper-based system and manual steps they have to go through. And obviously this leads to a long lead time since they're typically backlogged in the number of systems they have to provision and the time it takes them to go through the manual steps. Versus the automation with the cloud and service management, where the automation is really doing the work. They're provisioned, you know, in a consistent manner because the work is automated and available when the customer needs it. So instead of waiting for 2 or 3 weeks to get a system, you can get it, you know, in a day, going through the whole workflow and approvals and the actual provisioning of it. So and this, as we've seen in our studies, you know, lowered the provisioning cost by an average 51%. Based on the automation and the automated workflows that are part of the part of that offering. Now, going along with the automated provisioning, if we go to slide 17, you know, there's another benefit of this automation is that, you know, IT can set policies to improve their own efficiency. So when you talk about, you know, leveraging automated provisioning to set policy, this is where you can define, you know, what actions you want to take and also have that automated. So, like, you can have policies for provisioning new images, and this where we show the policy action might be that, you know, anytime you provision back in an existing image, you always check and apply, you know, the latest patches to that environment. Or, you know, instead of having your resources sit idle for months, you can take a policy action to, you know, whenever the scheduled time is you've defined in the self-serve portal, you know, they requested it for maybe 2 weeks to be available. At the end of that 2 weeks, you can take an image of the environment and then deprovision the resources and return them to the pool. And this way, if the, you know, test environment needs to be recreated quickly, you have an image that can, again, quickly be provisioned out to another virtual machine in case they need it for another day or two. You know, that's not a problem. But if they don't, you've already, you know, deprovisioned that resource and made it available for other uses. So again, you can improve the quality of the services as well as reducing costs through making sure the services are deprovisioned on time and are available for use by other users. So again, this is another area that really resonates with the IT organization where they can make things available for the times that, you know, they're needed and then deprovision them and, you know, reuse those resources. So it's really starting to build, you know, added benefits. Not only are you getting the productivity savings of the automation, but now you're also improving your hardware utilization, which really allows you to do, you know, more with less because now you're taking more, you know, better advantage of both the people resource and the physical hardware resources. On slide 18, we get into the third key area we talked about, and those were the administrative savings. And again, you know, you want to really stay on top of the things going on inside of your cloud, you know, how resources are being used, the performance and availability issues that you might run into, how is power being consumed. You know, one of the big benefits of having a virtualized infrastructure is the ability to move workloads around, so using some of the other service management capabilities that can look for hotspots in the data center. Maybe you want to move some workload off a machine that's being overutilized or generating a large heat footprint onto one that's in a cooler part of the data center. You know, you can start to take advantage of some of those energy management capabilities. Budgeting, being able to analyze the costs and plan, track, and allocate the usage of the systems, so you know that this department is using these services. As things are more virtualized, it's typically not where you're, billing based on, this group is using machine, A and B, but they're using, virtual machines on different systems. So you want to be able to track that usage and then be able to budget and plan based on that capability, as well as charge back to the end user departments. Having those set of capabilities, and then certainly security, where you have centralized identity and access control across the environment, is also very key. So these are just some of the capabilities that go beyond just the things that we've talked about in the first two sections, where you have the portal and the catalog and automated provisioning, which are huge cost-saving drivers. But then you can extend that to other areas of performance and energy management, security, that are also key in cloud environments. And this is really moving, as you see on 19, from kind of a siloed-based traditional infrastructure management approach into more of a cloud environment that's integrated, has visibility across, the different areas that you're managing, provides, end-to-end security management, gives you the data you need to do accurate billing and budgeting for the services you're delivering. So these are some of the key benefits that the cloud environment and a service management system deployed with your cloud can really start to drive home those savings. So I think, up until this part, we've really shown that when you think about the chart that showed the traditional infrastructure cost line and the cloud computing cost line, hopefully now you have a little better feel or what's behind the savings between the between those two lines, the large gap given the cloud cost structure and the traditional infrastructure. I think when you look at the self-serve portal and the catalog, the automated provisioning capabilities, the other kind of extended service management system capabilities, those are really the key pieces that are driving down your labor costs and delivering the ROI that the cloud systems are promising. So while the hardware and virtualization are certainly a key aspect of the savings, again, the large majority is driven by the reduction in labor savings across the environment. Now, at this point, I'd like to spend a minute on how you get started. And that takes us to chart 20 with getting started with cloud and service management. And I think when you look at 20, you have to kind of step back for a minute and really think what this chart is telling you. And I think, over my lengthy IBM career, this is probably the simplest chart, I've ever seen, because typically at this point of the presentation and most IBM presentations, we then get into the 20 products you need to implement to actually achieve some of the savings that have been shown. But in this case, the vast majority of those savings can be delivered going down one of two paths. So it's really a kind of a simple decision point. And when we look at the left-hand side of the chart, if your customer wants to use their existing hardware and build a customized solution, but they want the self-serve portal, the service catalog, the automated provisioning, and some of the basic service management capabilities for the cloud, they only need to get the Tivoli Service Automation Manager. I mean, that's our flagship product that contains all those capabilities. It's not, 15 or 10 or 5 products, but it's one product that you implement to get all those capabilities. And it makes it a very simple story that, you know, I want to get started in cloud and the management of cloud. Here's the offering I need to do the key management components, again, of the self-serve portal, the catalog, the automated provisioning, are all in the Tivoli Service Automation Manager. So that's, you know, simple story number one is to use that capability. Now, if the customer says, well, even that's, you know, more because I'm going to have to go in and configure this and figure out what hardware I want to put it on, you know, that's even more that he wants than they want to get into, then you can go down the right-hand side of the chart, which delivers, you know, a turnkey environment with little or no customization. And this is the IBM CloudBurst offering that we introduced in May of this year. And again, this contains for, you know, a single price, the hardware, software, and services you need to deliver a complete cloud environment. So we basically wheel in the box. It's pre-configured with the software. We provide the services on top of it that turn it on, get it running, do any setup for you. So when services leaves, you're basically ready to put your own cloud-based services on the box. So there couldn't be much simpler than, you know, getting IBM CloudBurst to deliver that, you know, complete, you know, kind of soup to nuts capabilities of delivering a cloud-based infrastructure. So again, I think it's a very simple matter of getting started with either the Tivoli Service Automation Manager, you know, building that as a custom solution on the customer's own hardware. And again, we provide services that can customize that, you know, if necessary. Or you can go with the IBM CloudBurst, which is a complete, you know, turnkey solution that has the hardware, software, and services for a single price. So I think it's a really easy matter of getting started with these services that, you know, a very straightforward approach here. Now, in chart 21, just a little more detail, and, you know, I won't spend a lot of time on these. We have other presentations on the offerings. We have the Tivoli Service Automation Manager. And again, this is the one that can really provide the life cycle of services around the cloud as far as getting them deployed, managing those services, and, you know, requesting and deploying them, as we've seen. And again, the customer benefits are around improved innovation. You know, we can deliver the services a lot faster, get them, you know, into production much more quickly, and decrease your operational expense because now you've increased your IT labor efficiencies and reduced those costs through a lot of the capabilities that we've talked about in this presentation that are, again, all delivered through this single Tivoli Service Automation Manager offering. On chart 22, this is the IBM CloudBurst, and again, this is the integrated service management offering. It has the network, server, storage, the quick start services, financing, you know, again, the whole set of capabilities you need delivered on the hardware to the customer. That, again, goes even beyond the Tivoli Service Automation Manager to provide an even faster time to value. Again, we wheel in the box, and it's preloaded with the software, and give you the services to get it all started. So in this case, you can, you know, decrease your capital expenses, reduce any complexity and risk, because we've, you know, done the automation and standardization that can really deliver this quickly for you. All right. Now, at this point, I'd just like to take a little segue because I know there have been some questions, and I get questions from the account team on, you know, well, what about the WebSphere CloudBurst appliance and how does that relate to the IBM CloudBurst appliance? And, you know, as far as driving ROI, is there overlap between them? And chart 23 describes, you know, what the WebSphere CloudBurst appliance is, and it's another hardware-based appliance that provides basically the WebSphere environment that you need, you know, the virtual images and patterns that you can quickly deploy the WebSphere applications on. So again, it has a lot of the same benefits, you know, reduced setup time, reduced risk by, you know, having more of a standard infrastructure, provides security, and the maintenance management of the applications, and again, reduces the overall labor costs in deploying the WebSphere applications. And I think it's helpful to think about, you know, the IBM CloudBurst box really provides, you know, a breadth of capabilities, you know, a cloud platform that you can deploy you know, any type of services that you need on top of. It's kind of a general purpose in that sense. Cloud platform, where the WebSphere CloudBurst appliance is more of an in-depth thing, in-depth appliance for the WebSphere environment. So it provides a lot of depth in being able to efficiently deploy the WebSphere applications. Now the question is, you know, how do the two work together? So on chart 24, we talk about the WebSphere CloudBurst appliance and the IBM CloudBurst as a winning combination. And it's a fairly simple story where the WebSphere CloudBurst appliance, if you're going to deploy, you know, the WebSphere applications into a cloud setting, you obviously have to have a cloud deployed somewhere to use that with. So if you use the IBM CloudBurst offering, you know, you can bring that in, set up the cloud. And again, it's all prepackaged and set up for you when the services team leaves. So then you could put in a WebSphere CloudBurst appliance and point it at the IBM CloudBurst box, so the WebSphere applications that you're deploying into the cloud could go right into the IBM CloudBurst box, and it's all a very synergistic solution here. So the WebSphere dispenses, you know, the patterns and the images into the IBM CloudBurst box, which provides the, you know, the prepackaged cloud offering. So it's very easy to, you know, use the two together. You know, there's not overlap in what they do. The one is doing the WebSphere applications, and the other is providing the cloud infrastructure you need to deploy those applications on. So again, certainly, you know, partner with your WebSphere rep if you're a Tivoli rep, or if you're a WebSphere rep, you know, partner with Tivoli or Tivoli with WebSphere. And I've seen, you know, some notes from both sides of that where we've had Tivoli reps that were looking to bring WebSphere into the deal and wanted to know how to position the two together, and WebSphere reps that were looking to bring their Tivoli rep into the deal and had the same questions. So we'll be working on some more content and a podcast that provides more details around this. But certainly don't be afraid to sell the two products together. They're very synergistic in what they can provide. All right, and in kind of wrapping up here, just to set the stage with the customer that we have, you know, things beyond, you know, the ROI and service management that we've talked about in this presentation, we have a number of cloud offerings. In fact, just on October 6th, we announced a new set of offerings. You see on this chart the blue check marks were new in October. We continue to expand on the workloads we provide. If you look across the top of the chart, it shows the different workloads, analytics, collaboration, dev test, and then down the side in the rows, the top row is services we deliver on the IBM cloud. It's basically a, you know, a public cloud kind of service provided by IBM. In the middle row of the Smart Business Cloud are services that IBM can build, you know, and manage for you, or you can put into your own premise for delivering cloud services. And then on the bottom are the pre-configured integrated offerings, like the IBM CloudBurst offering I just talked about, where we can bring it in as a pre-packaged solution into your environment. And you'll see over time, as you see in this October announcement we just did, you know, we continue to fill out this with, you know, more workloads, more capabilities in both the public cloud, the private cloud solution, and the pre-integrated solution, you know, new offerings and analytics, the Lotus Notes, iNotes capability that was just delivered in collaboration, other offerings in storage. We had a number of storage offerings announced recently that are cloud-based. So a lot of capabilities that, you know, really, if they're, you know, interested in beyond just a dev test environment, there's a complete set of offerings that IBM is delivering. So on chart 26, you know, why cloud with IBM? And really in this area, it's, you know, we're pretty much unmatched in the depth of offerings we have, the technical architectures. You know, we're expanding this not only to run on our blade centers as with IBM CloudBurst, but to run on our P-Series on the mainframe environment. So we have a broad choice of platforms to run it on. You know, a lot of expertise, our cloud labs around the world, the service management capabilities we talked about. There's really a whole host of reasons, I think, around the IBM capabilities, you know, why IBM is a clear leader in the cloud space and is getting more press every day, it seems, around the capabilities we're delivering and, you know, our competitiveness with Google and Amazon and Microsoft and other cloud providers. And we certainly have the capabilities to do more in-depth briefings with your customers through our briefing centers and, you know, other cloud computing centers around the world. So hopefully this has helped you kind of see, one, you know, again, the ROI and service management capabilities and how the service management capabilities are key in driving the ROI in clouds. Has gone into somewhat level of depth on how those capabilities are actually delivered, how the ROI is achieved, and then shown kind of the broader portfolio at a high level of what IBM has to offer. So certainly we'd like you to be out there, you know, selling this with your customers, selling, you know, the service management capabilities that we've discussed. And if you have any questions or comments on the presentation, back in the title slide, you can see my name, Rick Mayo, and my email ID, mayor@us.ibm.com, which is pretty easy to remember. So I appreciate your time listening today, and feel free to contact me if you'd like you know, any questions or comments. Thanks again.